Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well,
yeah. So
I was talking about my ceiling noises.
Yeah, and you said it's
and
a
the
tin
wood,
roof.
The wood beams in the ceiling, but then above the wood beams, I'm pretty sure is this little thin tin roof that is super loud.
And you said tin roof, and I said, is it rusted? Anyway, we have a texter.
Yes.
And I would like to. We need to examine this because I don't know if it's true or not.
Yes.
The texter says tin roof rusted would mean Amy's pregnant.
What?
Because the B-52's hit song Love Shack, Tin Roof Rusted, mm-hmm. is interpreted to mean pregnant, usually with an unintended baby.
So
I just let me say, I have never heard that explanation ever.
I did a little investigation of that. Another one said it could mean drunk, and another explanation said that's just what fans said, but that's not what the B-52s meant. Because there was no pre-existing slang of that phrase.
I'd never
existing.
Heard that.
Yeah, I'd never heard it either.
Okay. Well, let's just assume that it is. I like that. I think from now on, that's what we'll call it. Oh, you're having a baby, huh? Tin roof rusted, huh?
Although it
do you
sounds,
think that's Do you think that like, is...
It feels a little personal.
It does.
I feel like you shouldn't say it.
Well,
like, I don't want to rain on your parade, Ronj, but I do feel like I wouldn't say that to a lady.
Well, depends on the lady. Some of the people I know, they deserve it. They deserve me being rude to them.
They deserve to be insulted while pregnant. Yeah. That's mean.
Well, I know some real a-holes.
I know some pregnant ladies that deserve to be insulted.
So we were real quick before we get to, and I guess this still matters because it is still kind of newsy that people in St. Louis mm-hmm. are still, even though this storm was, 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah.
They are still having difficulty in either getting their trash picked up or getting their mail delivered. And I was checking in with my Soulard friends on mm-hmm. one of the few text message, mass text threads I'm on. And they are all saying that, most of them are saying that trash has not been picked up.
Wow.
That one of them says they are getting trash, but no mail. The others are saying getting mail, but no trash. So it's a problem.
Wow.
And then one of them has a brother who lives downtown west close to City Park, now Energizer Park. And the loft that he lives in has not had the trash picked up the entire time. He's got photos of garbage stacked up in the trash room. The trash chutes are full. So that would mean that the trash is not getting picked up. That's downtown west. It's right here.
Yeah.
It's just a couple of blocks from where we are.
It's not great. Kara Spencer, who is running for mayor against incumbent Tashara Jones, Kara Spencer posted a picture of, I guess it's her street, completely ice covered, like super shiny. You could ice skate on it. And the caption was 18 days. 18 days.
So over 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
And as you mentioned, the trash piling up. And I thought downtown west, for the most part, was pretty cleared
off. It looks pretty good. So I don't know if it's a building problem. That could be an issue with the building staff. Yeah. I don't know. It may not
be the
city. But
this is what, Michael Kelly and John Hancock, what we were talking about last week. You can't have these big, grandiose visions of, like, fixing social ills and personal problems and reparations or whatever it may be when the people living in your city just want their trash picked up. Or they want their streets plowed.
We have a texter who says that Lindenwood, and I'm assuming that's Lindenwood Park, right? Lindenwood Park is
like
a neighborhood.
South of Dogtown, I think.
I guess. And St. Louis Hills, they have also had, since the beginning of the storm, which was 2.5 weeks ago, they have had no trash picked up.
How about this?
But they say the mail wasn't bad. It was acceptable for the area they're in, but the trash has not been picked up.
How about this?
And those are two St. Louis neighborhoods.
How about the city continues to run its police force, but the state takes over plowing the roads and the trash pickup?
Fine, whatever.
Like, this is insane. And the thing is, I will say, the trash pickup has been something that we've been talking about since I was on with Charlie Brennan, like 2019. Trash pickup has always been something of an issue, but it has been exacerbated with this current snowstorm and the streets not being plowed. And the residents of the city of St. Louis are not happy. They're not happy. Well, from the St. Louis City, shall we go to St. Louis County?
Sure.
So the St. Louis County Council yesterday, remember how they wanted to have the power to remove County Executive Sam Page? Well, they decided to scrap that measure. Instead, they passed a measure that would give it the power to fire department heads.
When an executive turns a blind eye to misinformation or obstruction, he undermines not only the council, but also the very people he was elected to serve. Time and again, we have witnessed directors emboldened by the administration refuse to collaborate with this council, mislead us in official proceedings, and even provide outright falsehoods during testimony. There is no place for this level of disregard in county government.
This is Democracy Manifest.
So that was Council Chair Rita Hurd Days. She's a Democrat from North County, and she said the council members need the power to remove department heads because they have been, quote, forced to deal with chronic stonewalling under County Executive Sam Page. She said department leaders have withheld information the council needs. They've not been able to move forward with county government procedures because Sam Page is just a giant obstruction. So, no, the council does not have power to remove the county executive, but they did vote on the power to fire department heads.
Well, it sure seems like Sam Page has lost a lot of allies.
I can't think of one. Maybe,
well,
Lisa Clancy?
I wonder, I kind of feel bad for Court Van Ostrin, who was his pick to take over the Wesley Bell vacancy when he became a representative and, you know, is no longer the county prosecutor. And that was Sam Page's pick. And Court Van Ostrin had to leave his job that he had so that he could potentially assume this role. Well, then the state says, we're going to take this. And he didn't even have people on the council behind him on that pick.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if Court Van Ostrin is a good attorney. Maybe he is. Maybe he is not. I don't know if he would have been good for the county. But I do feel bad for him.
It's not his fault.
None of it is his fault. But I'm sure he did not get approved, at least in part, because of the council's, I don't know if dislike is the right word, whatever it is they have for Sam Page.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's dislike. It is a big one. And so the voters will have to vote on this, I believe, to give the county council power. Now, Doug Moore, a spokesman for Sam Page, said if voters approve the measure, the council could remove directors with 5 of 7 votes. And while Doug Moore said Page will veto that measure, Councilman Dennis Hancock said the county executive can't veto a ballot measure passed by the council. So they are already arguing over this measure that passed, whether or not the council will be able to move forward despite Sam Page's attempt to veto. Yeah, he's lost everybody. As John Hancock said, like, generally in public office, you have to have people skills to a point, right? And be kind of good with people. That's what you need. And somehow Sam Page has made it as county executive without those skills because he seems to just lose everyone.
Yeah, I don't know the intricacies of it. I'm not one of those who watches St. Louis County Council meetings like you do.
Life. They're boring. I didn't watch the last one. It was like 5 hours long.
Why? There's nothing that you could have gained.
Because it kind of blows your mind.
Blows my mind? You want to watch it?
I know, but when you watch it, you're thinking, this is insane. Like, it's bickering. It's the real council members of St. Louis County only it's boring insanity, if that makes sense.
I would be bored silly. I'd be bored after a half hour. I'd say,
why don't we go to a meeting one time?
Okay, can
and we?
We
can sit there.
Can we make noises from the back?
I think we should protest.
Like when they're talking, can we be like, "Oh my God, end it! Why is this still going on?
Boring.
This is a real snooze fest in here, in this county meeting. But Amy loves it. You're probably in there taking notes, aren't you? You were watching that meeting, taking notes.
Yes, and I made a sign. Anybody, any age, we don't like executive page. That would be my protest.
Oh, that's stupid.
with the little
sign. I know what you're doing.
Have you ever marched with a sign?
I've never marched.
What?
I don't march.
Have you ever been in a parade?
Have I been in a parade?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, which parade?
Oh, the Little League parade when I was a kid.
What is that?
Well, the Little League, before the Little League season starts, all the Little League kids
have a parade?
Yeah, well, I think that we were part of a bigger parade, but we would have our little teams and our little uniforms, and we'd march down Madison Avenue.
Really?
In Granite City. Yeah. It was cute.
That's adorable.
Of course it's.
That was the last protest or parade you've ever been in.
I've never gone to a protest.
I don't think I have either.
I believe in the right to do it. I just have
you
never
been. You also believe
been
in the right not to do it.
Correct. Yeah. I have never been fired up enough that I felt like I needed to go to a protest.
What if you protested protesting?
Well, that's stupid.
So at any rate, I've been in a couple parades. I'm sure I don't think I've ever been to a protest. But anyway, the county council will continue to follow this because it's a boring.
A text message says, when is Kara Spencer going to start campaigning? She has so much to run on and we aren't hearing anything. I hear from Kara Spencer
from
all
Kara
the time.
Spencer. Yeah. Are you on social media? She's pretty vocal
she's all
on
over,
social
yeah.
media. Yeah. Signs. Her office.
Yes.
Downtown.
Her office right off Olive mm-hmm. and Jefferson. Yeah,
yeah I've
seen quite a bit from
this
her.
The past couple of weeks are devastating for Mayor Tishara Jones.
Now, I wonder how that's going to play weeks from now. We're still quite a bit off from, when the election's going to be. Do people still remember it?
If the trash hasn't been picked up yet.
It'll get done soon.
But I do think, to your point, right, we have a very, very short memory, short attention span. So 2 months in a presidential election is forever. I think the memory is a little bit longer for local elections it's so personal.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not so sure, but I suppose she's got a pretty good chance of winning that election. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Tell us what you think. 314-436-7900, or you can leave us a voice message directly from the Odyssey app. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji, KMOX. You can text the show whenever you want at 314-436-7900. And we were just talking about the city issues with the ice and the snow and the lack of plowing in certain areas and people not getting their mail or having their trash picked up. Still, there's still people 2.5 weeks later who are having difficulty in both of those areas, though it's improved in a lot of places, but still in Soulard, some difficulty. We've heard from people in St. Louis Hills and Lindenwood Park, and I know of now somebody here downtown West for some reason has not had their trash picked up. And then we had a texter who said, why do we not hear much from Kara Spencer, who is running against Tishara Jones for mayor this year? And they feel like they haven't seen much presence because there's been so much to run on.
Yeah.
And Amy and I both said, well, and maybe it's because we get to interview her.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're paying closer attention. But I've heard a lot from Kara Spencer. So, this message says, So do we need to follow Spencer on Instagram in order to hear from her? Because I'm with that texter. The only time I hear about Kara Spencer is when you guys talk about her.
So that's a good point, because my first thought was, if not on social media, where would you hear from Kara Spencer? And I guess she could run a radio campaign ad or a TV campaign ad on local TV, on local radio. I don't know how much that costs. I don't know if mayoral campaigns in St. Louis have the funds for that. I don't know. So, no, I don't. I'm trying to think. The main time that I watch, like, local news, Fox 2, KSDK, Hancock and Kelly in the morning on Fox 2. So I do watch regular 2-4-5 TV on the weekends with that, or maybe in the morning.
Yeah.
I'll turn on the local news. Like I said, usually I just listen to Total Information AM. So I don't know. We could ask if you know, who has, do they run radio and television mayoral ads? I personally haven't seen any, but it doesn't mean they're not there.
Right. I don't notice political ads unless we're talking about a presidential or a midterm general election. Usually that's when you see all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the primary is March 4th, so she has to get through the primary process first, and then the general election is April 8th. So that is, there's not a whole lot of time here. I mean, we're talking about a little bit less than 2 months.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how you would hear from a lot of these candidates unless you are seeking it out.
Unless you're watching
local news, unless you are listening to this show, listening to KMOX, I don't know how otherwise you would know much about.
I know she knocks on doors. I'm pretty sure she knocks on doors.
Yeah, there's that.
I would say maybe they do billboards, literal highway billboards, pamphlets, flyers in the mail, although probably won't be worth it if the mail's not being delivered, but you get what I'm saying. Like, maybe it probably has to be a bunch of different avenues, and you hope you see as many people as possible. But again, I don't know if her campaign funds allow for a television or a radio campaign.
But I think this goes into a conversation we have had in the past, and a question that I have asked before: how much do people owe it to one another to pay attention to the politics on a local level and a national level, to know about the candidates other than what, you know, smacks them in the face?
Yeah.
Like, if you have a busy life and you have a lot going on, you have kids, you have things you have to do, and your job makes you work 13 hours a day or whatever it is, do you still owe it to people to be informed, to be truly informed about the candidates and about what is going on politically? And that would include your local elections. And I think you have to spend it. You should, because your decisions and your votes will impact other people. I think you should spend a decent amount of time. And I don't have, like, what's the appropriate amount of time, but you should spend a decent amount of time getting to know candidates who are running for office that you get to vote for.
Yeah, and I would just say this too. I've had a couple people in the city say, when do I get to vote for Kara Spencer? Because they're voting out of frustration, right? You're like, hey, I don't like the way things are. I don't like the way things have been. I want change. And so then a lot of times you rely on name recognition.
Right.
You're like, okay, well, I'll vote. Oh, I know that name.
And that's been going on forever.
And yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for any race. Let's get a voice message from Robin.
In smaller communities like Ellisville don't want to join St. Louis City. My streets have been cleared. My mail is coming. My trash is being picked up. Why would I want to combine with St. Louis City?
Well, because St. Louis wouldn't be making all of your decisions. All of these decisions would be made in conjunction with, you know, the county. It'd be a merger. We'd all be together. So everybody would be pooling our resources together. So it wouldn't just be the mayor of St. Louis making decisions for Ellisville.
Yeah, I get the hesitation, reluctance, cynicism, because I do think we already know, okay, the county council is having its own struggles. But, you know, Ellisville has a mayor and Chesterfield has a mayor. The county executive is more powerful. But all of those little, you know, Chesterfield, so
municipalities.
Forth, thank you. Yes, they have their own mayors. They can do snow removal, all of those things. I think if you're already kind of like, all right, things are working, I don't want to bring in leaders that we're seeing are already failing. I get that cynicism.
But also, you would have a voice in who those leaders are.
Yes.
You'd have a greater voice.
I think we'd have to reassure the set. Because right now, we don't know the setup. I think voters would need to see the setup.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Well, apparently there is a big problem in the country. We have more and more older Americans, but we have fewer physicians to take care of those older patients. And to talk more about that with us and what the future holds, Dr. Molly Ellman will visit with us when we come back on KMOX.
Would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you. And as a recent New York Times article highlighted, the American population is older than it's ever been, with more than 55 million people over the age of 65. They also highlighted an unfortunate reality that there aren't enough doctors to give them the care they need. Joining us now is Dr. Molly Ellman, senior care-focused physician at the 65 Prime Plus facility at Mercy Primary Care. Dr. Ellman, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so I think we keep hearing the headline about the American population getting older, and we understand what that means maybe on the economy or on the workload of younger Americans. But one thing I really didn't think about are geriatricians, doctors who specialize in working with older adults. What can you tell us about geriatrician? Is it like the name, like a pediatrician? That's exactly their specialty?
Yeah, that's right. So geriatricians are doctors who have special training in caring for older adults. Typically, this will come after a residency in internal medicine or family medicine. So there's typically 1 to 2 years of geriatric fellowship training that geriatricians will complete. And we learn in our training how to care specifically for older adults and common geriatric syndromes, such as polypharmacy, cognitive impairment, frailty, urinary incontinence, falls. Those are just some of the things that we have extra training in our fellowship for.
Yeah, I think I tend to break people down like the aspirin bottle, like under 2 years of age, under 12, and then older than 12. And I know that's not how the human body works. And so you mentioned some of the fundamental differences in older Americans, which, like you said, weakness, frailty, muscle mass declining, their immune systems. I guess it's a pretty long list of things that are fundamentally different as you age.
Yeah, that's right. So older adults definitely are more prone to chronic medical conditions like diabetes, heart disease, kidney disease, but also, sensory impairments such as hearing impairment, vision impairment, that really affect quality of life. Definitely older adults process medications differently. They're more sensitive to side effects of medication. And definitely just more susceptible to any infection and illness. So lots of things to consider when we're caring for older adults. It really is a very complex picture. Mm-hmm. Lots of things to think about there.
The New York Times story pointed out that there is about one geriatrician for every 10,000 older Americans, and that ratio is getting worse, with the number of board-certified geriatricians falling from 10,000 in the year 2000 to just under 7,400 in 2022. How much do those numbers or that reality concern you being in the field?
Yeah, so that is, it's a reality and it is definitely concerning. When I was in training, about 7 years ago for geriatrics, we were already thinking about that. People have been thinking about that in the field of geriatrics for a long time. So we're aware that unfortunately there's not enough formally trained geriatricians to go around. So everyone in the field, I think, kind of sees it as our calling to provide education, and any training wherever we can to other, whether it's other physicians or nurses or other people in the healthcare field about how to take care of older adults. So we're all kind of trying to diffuse the knowledge we got in training, but the reality is that there are just not enough geriatricians to go around. So we have to rely on our, primary care colleagues, internists, family medicine docs to help carry that load.
What do you think is steering people away from becoming a geriatrician and specializing in the field of caring for older adults?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think part of it is the complexity. It's really, it's something that, you know, it takes a lot of, you know, extra kind of training and medical understanding. So part of it, I think, is the complexity. Unfortunately, geriatrics is not a highly compensated field. So people in medicine may be, you know, turned off from that. But really, it's just, I think some people think, oh, I don't necessarily need that extra training. It's just more time I have to be, you know, learning and in school as opposed to kind of getting things started. So yeah, I think some of those might be some of the deterrents there.
Yeah. So when it comes to the compensation, and again, this was an average that the New York Times pointed out, that a geriatrician can make about $258,000 compared with an average physician salary of $350,000. And if, as you mentioned, there's other complications in working with older adults, why is the compensation so much less in the geriatric field?
Gosh, I wish I knew that. You know, I don't have a great answer for you there. I've known that's been the reality. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think definitely there are a lot of geriatricians end up staying, formally trained geriatricians will end up staying in academics, and academics is just generally lower compensated than non-academic fields. So that could be part of the reason. I'm not sure otherwise, but that's one thought.
Would it have something to do with older patients, a lot of them using like Medicare, which might not reimburse physicians as much as private insurance would?
That could play a role. I think, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, certainly Medicare reimbursement is changing. So time will tell kind of how all that will shake out. But yeah, it is really unfortunate. the compensation structure is unfortunate.
When you look at the care for older Americans, one of the complexities that was brought up is just like over prescriptions. Like there's so many prescriptions, there are a lot of chronic conditions, and a lot of times patients may not get better, right? They're getting older. How would you sell this field to someone who's looking into becoming a physician? And how would you say, hey, I think you should focus on older Americans?
Yeah, so what you're describing is polypharmacy, the prescription of multiple medications at once. We certainly, you know, see prescribing cascades every day. So that means, you know, a patient gets prescribed one medication to treat a condition, that medication will cause a side effect, then they'll be prescribed a second medication to treat the side effect of the third medication, and then often a third or even fourth medication to treat side effects of medications that they've been prescribed. So that prescribing cascade can be really dangerous for the patient. It leads to, you know, unnecessary hospitalizations and decrease in function, you know, from side effects. But so that's a really common thing that I see every day. And I think one of the most rewarding aspects of my job is that I really am able to recognize that and kind of stop that before it starts. And so with older adults, I mean, yes, there are lots of things that we have to consider, lots of complex medical issues. And like you said, sometimes those don't always get better and they're hard to treat, but there are some really kind of small changes that we can make. And one of those is, you know, eliminating unnecessary medication, stopping prescribing cascades that can make a huge impact in the quality of life and function of older adults. So the fact that we can do, you know, something as simple as stopping a medication and really improve quality of life is a huge upside to my job and one of my favorite things to do every day.
Like how do you actually do that? How do you get people to want to do that?
Yeah, so, you know, I think money is one part of it, right? So everybody, you know, that matters to most people in any field. But I will say, you know, for physicians who really are interested in caring for older adults, improving function, making a big difference in quality of life for older patients, you know, I think there are other things besides money and salary that impact that decision. So, for example, my employer, Mercy, we have a new exciting model of care called 65 Prime Plus, which is where I practice. It's a primary care model that takes care of older adults only. So we specialize in the care of older patients, and we have, you know, extra things that make the job really wonderful and rewarding. So we have longer time with our patients. We have smaller patient panels. We have the opportunity to really spend time with them and get to know them and take, you know, take care of them in a way that we as physicians have kind of always wanted to care for our patients. So providing that individual attention, getting that extra time with them, those things go a really long way in bringing people to do, you know, certain roles and certain jobs. So, you know, for example, having extra time and being able to see fewer patients and spend more time with them can really sort of outweigh any amount of money, in my opinion, when trying to, you know, get people to take care of older adults.
Yeah, with you mentioned the 65 prime plus. That's almost like, you know, a mission. It's the human side of things, which is why a lot of people go into the field in the first place. So like you said, money is great, but if you are passionate about this and you can spend more time with patients and talk with patients through this, that can be a mission-driven field.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what our model is embodying. We have providers who are dedicated to caring for older patients and really want to be able to provide them the highest level of care. And the patients really love it because they feel like their providers get to sit down with them, get to know them. And, you know, that's one of the most important things about caring for older patients is knowing them well. And so patients who know their doctors and trust their doctors, and when their doctors are available to them, they can get into their office when they have a problem. You know, they can spend an hour with them for their annual wellness visit, getting to know, you know, what are your advanced care planning wishes, what things are most important to you, what matters in your quality of life and your function. Those types of relationships are really what will help us take the most excellent care of older adults that we can. And that just really is very, very difficult to do in a busy sort of in and out 15, 20 minute office visit. So in terms of optimizing the healthcare of older adults, the opportunity to spend more time and get patients in quickly when they need to be seen is an amazing opportunity for us as physicians and also for patients as well.
You mentioned 65 prime plus. Can you go into more detail about what that would mean for patients?
Yeah, so our clinic model is a primary care model for patients who are typically over 65 or patients that have Medicare or Medicare Advantage plans. So like I said, we're specializing in the care of older adults. It's a Mercy primary care clinic. So, you know, no need for any special modifications. It's under the Mercy umbrella, but all of the providers in our clinics, in our 65 prime plus clinics are devoted and dedicated to the care of older patients. They're interested in it. And we have special resources and support in our system to provide that care. So that looks like, you know, longer patient visit times, smaller patient panels for the providers. So we're taking care of fewer patients, but we get to spend more time with them. Different staffing ratios in terms of our nursing support, our clinic support. And like I said, a big issue is the access, so being able to get patients in when they need to be seen.
I'm sure potential patients would want to know about cost, if it's more expensive, if it's anything different than what they might normally do.
Yeah, it's not. And that's the best part about our model. People say, like, what's the catch? I can't believe this. It seems too good to be true. And they're expecting me to tell them, like, oh, yeah, it's an extra, you know, $3,000 a year, some type of concierge cost. And it's not. It's just as though you were going to any typical Mercy primary care practice. There's no extra associated cost. It's really just like I said, Mercy's response to the growing population, the knowledge that we need to take better care of older adults. We need to prepare ourselves for this influx of seniors. And so this is what we're doing to help.
And we're talking with Dr. Molly Ellman, senior care focused physician at the 65 Prime Plus. So if people are listening, Dr. Ellman, and like they already have a primary physician, but now they want to switch, is that something you can do? You know, just call the 65 Prime Plus facility and switch doctors, become a new patient there?
Yeah, so we have two clinics currently open in the St. Louis area. And we are opening several more in 2025. So, you know, certainly for people that feel like they need more specialized care in terms of older adults, if they have more complex medical needs, absolutely we are taking new patients to our clinics. You know, I think it's an important thing to consider. Like I said, you know, the relationship with your primary care doctor is a really important one. So people that doctors know them well and, you know, they trust their doctor and have a good relationship with them. I think that's something really important to consider. We certainly don't want people who have, you know, an amazing relationship with their doctor and are having all their needs met, you know, come to a 65 Prime Plus clinic just because they're 65. But I think for those patients who are looking for, you know, a more specialized care, who have more complex chronic medical needs, that would certainly be someone we'd love to see in our clinic.
Just to follow up on that, would it be conceivable that somebody could keep their doctor they've had for a long time, but also come to the clinic, or would that be, you know, sort of redundant?
Yeah, so our clinic is a primary care clinic, and patients really can only have one primary care doctor. So if you switch to a Mercy 65 Prime Plus clinic, you will be effectively transferring your primary care, and you would no longer see, you know, your previous primary care doctor.
Dr. Molly Ellman, Senior Care-Focused Physician at 65 Prime Plus, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And where can people find more information about 65 Prime?
Yeah, so if you go to mercy.net and type in 65 Prime, you'll see all the information there with information about our clinics. And we have, you know, 65 Prime Plus clinics all across Mercy's region. So, you know, they're all across the ministry. But if you type in 65 Prime Plus at mercy.net and focus in on St. Louis, you'll find us there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Molly Ellman, Senior Care Physician at 65 Prime Plus. This is The Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Got a text message from a 314. You can text us at 314-436-7900. And the message says, I just got notification from the Savannah Bananas lottery for tickets that I won the ability to buy tickets. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. The notices went out today, which prompted me.
Because you lost your mind upon reading that.
Yeah, I thought, what the hell, man? At first, I forgot that I put my name in, too. But I did, because I also got an email, and I thought, this is great. This means you have to verify your phone number and your email address. And I thought, okay, so the next step is I just buy tickets? No. Here's what the email says, and it's a long one. It says, going through the verification process does not guarantee tickets or even the chance to buy them.
What?
You'll be randomly assigned a time slot, and it's possible tickets may sell out to those with earlier time slots before your slot arrives, but your chances are better than most, and you're in the running for greatness. The hell, man?
So they were just weeding you out for bots.
To make sure this
is... Will you get another email with your time slot?
Yep. I'll get a notification of some kind with a time slot.
What if... When do the time slots start? Do they start at midnight?
I don't know.
Could your time slot be 1:17 in the morning?
I don't know.
This is like...
This is a hard ticket to get.
This is harder ticket to get than Taylor Swift or like the Pope. I don't know if the Pope sells tickets, but that's what the Savannah Bananas are treating this as if they're the Pope.
Well, the Savannah Bananas, that's the minor league baseball team that they just do all kinds of goofy stuff, and it looks like a lot of fun. They've been hugely successful. They're getting huge crowds, and they are playing at Busch Stadium, part of the Banana Ball World Tour, on April 4th and April 5th. So it is a Friday and Saturday they will be here, and they're going to sell out both dates.
Well, and to clarify, the Cardinals are allowing the Savannah Bananas to use Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
This isn't through Cardinals tickets.
No, no, no.
This
has nothing to
do if you're a season ticket
holder.
Right. None of that matters. This is literally the Cardinals don't have any tickets.
Yeah, I was told by somebody with the Cardinals, we were just talking about it months ago, and they're like, we get nothing. It's just, they're just using the stadium, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that I get to be one of the, 80,000 people?
But it's good to know that, because if I were a season ticket holder, I would probably assume that I had... Like, oh, do I have a choice? No. You got to be in the lottery.
How amazing is this that it is a minor league baseball team that is very likely going to sell out back-to-back dates at Busch Stadium?
Bananas.
That's crazy.
Bananas.
Okay. Anything you missed today is on the Odyssey app. In particular, the interview with Jason Kander, really, really good. You should go back and listen to it, but listen to the whole show, really, honestly. Get the Odyssey app so you can do so. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 10 o'clock, but Amy and I will stick around with the Dave Glover Show next on KMOX.